Well, welcome everyone. Thank you for coming out today. It's so great to see all of you. The title of my talk today is, What's in Your Wallet? No, this isn't a credit card commercial. What's in your wallet? Your ID. And what is your ID? Your spiritual ID. Do you have an ID of lack and limitation and needing things? Or do you have an ID of prosperity and abundance and gratitude in your life? My three talking points today are, we are constantly rediscovering, not creating, our power. Number two, we are being selfish. Are we being selfish if we use that power for our own benefit? And thirdly, we are responsible for what we create. First of all, we are constantly rediscovering, not creating our power. We have this great power, but if we don't know it, we can't use it. You remember from last week when I talked about anamnesis? This is this idea that we have an innate intelligence. We have an innate knowing within us. And that we use the example of Plato and Socrates in his teaching with Meno's servant, and how he never taught the servant anything, and yet he was able to uncover inherent knowledge within him of a complex geometrical question. Never taught him anything, just asked him questions that any of us could answer, revealing an inner knowledge that we always had. Another example is, you know, before Columbus, Europeans had no knowledge of North and South America. They had no idea of the immense wealth, the knowledge that was already here, the fantastic two, you know, continents of North and South America. So they couldn't partake in it. They didn't know anything about it because they didn't even know it was there. And then another one example, and this is one of Ernest Holmes' most favorite ones that he used to illustrate this point, and that is the idea of electricity. Electricity has been on the earth since the very beginning, you know, but we didn't know about it. If we didn't know about it, we couldn't use it. Holmes talks about Moses didn't know about electricity, but once we learned, then we could use it. But if we don't know about our own power, we can't use it. A lady by the name of Peggy Frison in Rensselaer, New York, told just an amazing story. And this is going to show up in a sermon somewhere down the line about her dog and just an incredible miracle healing of her dog. But that's not the story today. The story today is, you know, the rest of the story. And it's what happened with her dog is after this miracle healing, she started studying animal human interactions and some of the things. And what it revealed was this innate knowledge that we seem to have within us, and particularly as it relates to pets and whatnot. She discovered people that have cancer sniffing dogs, dogs that can find cancer in people. She found a seeing eye horse, a horse that actually acts like what we would think of as a seeing-eye dog. But the horse goes along, will stop the blind person, will help the blind person just like a dog would. But this knowledge is already there. It's already within the horse. It's already within the dog. And yet we're able to uncover it and use it. Point number two, are we being selfish if we use that power for our own benefit? The question is, you know, shouldn't we be helping the sick and the poor rather than ourselves? If we've got this power within us, shouldn't we use it to help the less fortunate? And is it okay to create for ourselves? And for that, I do have a story. It's a story of Karen and Sharon, two identical twins in North Carolina. Growing up, they were often totally mistaken. And I saw their picture. That's one of those ones. They are so much alike, I'll bet their mother had trouble separating them. They look so much alike, and they did everything alike. They both loved figures and arithmetic and math, and they were both really, really good at it. And they both had it in their hearts to become accountants. That's what their driving passion was to be an accountant. We have accountants here. But we got several. But at an early age, in their teenage years, 15, one day Sharon noticed her sister Karen was squinting and trying to read the blackboard in class. And she thought, well, that's odd. I've never seen her do that before. And so she looked at the blackboard and she had trouble reading it as well. So they decided, we'll get closer. Well, they moved closer, and that helped. But it only helped for a little while. It kept getting worse and worse. And what happened is everything on the outside was fuzzy. And in the middle, if they focused in the middle, it was a dark spot. They had a version of macular degeneration that attacks teenagers. So when they were 16, instead of applying for a driver's permit or their first driver's license, they were declared legally blind. Their dream of becoming accountants began to go away because they felt that no one would trust an accountant that couldn't see. They did go on and finish high school. They were able to continue and finish college, and they got business degrees, but they never could get that accounting degree that they wanted so very much. They moved, helped their mom. Their mom had a cleaning business, and so they worked with mom in her cleaning business. And one day, one of the people that they were cleaning house for made a comment about that she had heard about a doctor who was trying a new thing that might be able to help them see. And they had all the same kinds of things that we have. Oh, I don't know. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. Shouldn't that go to someone else? Because they were relatively happy young ladies, even in spite of their blindness. Continuing on in this series of events in their lives, they both met guys about the same time. They both sort of fell in love with different guys at the same time. They both got married at about the same time. They both started having kids at the same time. And even though they had challenges in life, their lives were pretty full. And they really felt, well, maybe I'm not worthy of that. But this owner who was house they were cleaning persisted and said, you really need to look into this. And so they did explore it a little bit, and they thought, well, maybe it would work. They found out that this doctor was only 140 some miles away. And so they got their mom to drive them out to this doctor. And his work had been done with macular degeneration. And he was intrigued by the thought that he might be able to help these two younger ladies. And he did it through glasses. And they're really big, thick glasses, but it bends the light enough to allow them to be able to see. They went in and they tried on these glasses, and for the first time in over 10 years, they could read. They could actually see letters and numbers. They could see people. They could see things, and they were thrilled. But these glasses were very expensive, and they couldn't begin to afford them, even one pair, let alone two. And they were so close that they would never have one sister be able to get glasses and the other one not. So they decided they'd put it off for a while and they'd wait. But the next week when they went to the lady's house to clean, she told them, well, the book club met and we talked about your situation and we've decided that we are going to get the glasses for you. And they said, oh, we couldn't accept charity. We couldn't do that. And she said, it's not charity. Don't you understand? It's friendship. That's who we are as people. And so many times you see that in small towns. I think of Talkeetna and how Talkeetna comes together to help people like that. What an amazing gift. And I see our spiritual community here and how we come together to help one another. But they had to get over the hurdle of, I'm not good enough, or I'm not worthy, or to actually set inside and be open and receptive to that good. They had to move into that place where they could accept their own good. And the sacred reading this morning was so spot on. I just absolutely love that. If God has an abundance of all good, why would God want me to live in lack and limitation? If God is unconditional love, how could I be excluded from that love? It's not logical. It doesn't make sense for God to create an abundant universe and plop you right down in the middle of it and decide that you're going to suffer and be miserable through lack and limitation. And then the last sentence of the sacred reading, what can you do today to be more receptive to your good? Because it comes back. It's an action item. You have to take that step. Which then leads us right into the third point. We are responsible for the lives that we create. Last week, I made a point, and I got some feedback. And last week, the title of my talk was, Don't Bring Me Down. And the feedback I got is, I never understood how that title fit with your talk. What did that mean? What I was trying to get across was that we have an undercurrent sometimes. We have those thoughts of, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I can't do that. Then sometimes those are conscious thought. Sometimes they're unconscious or even subconscious thought. But it is that thought that holds us down. And I thought of a way to try and make that point better today, because that really is an important part of this idea that we are responsible for the lives that we create. And as so often has happened since we got back from Spain, I started daydreaming or thinking about our trip to Spain and walking through the Spanish countryside. And I remember seeing, you know, oh God, there are cows over there. I could do a whole sermon on cows in Spain. But very often you'd see them with a bird sitting on their back. And I remember that as a kid, cowbirds. Now, I don't know the proper ornithological name for them or the Latin name for them, but we always call them cowbirds. And they're black birds, they have a brown head. And they ride on the backs of the cows because the insects come around the cows and they can eat. They eat the insects. But because they're following the cows, they're herd animals, they don't have the ability to build a nest and return to it all the time. So what cowbirds do is they lay their eggs in another bird's nest. And the other bird comes back and sits on them and warms them and hatches them and they come out. Well, very often they will lay their eggs in smaller birds' nests, like chickadees or sparrows and things like that. Well, here's Mama Sparrow, and all of a sudden she's got this big old chick. And a big old chick is getting more of the food. But that's just like we are. We have sometimes these thoughts from outside that come into us and lay their foreign eggs in our nest. And we nurture them and we sit on them and we warm them and we hatch them. And they come out and they start overcrowding our natural thoughts of our own goodness, our own awareness of our own perfection, our awareness of our own divinity. And we allow those little chicks to muscle out the truth of who we are. And it's our job not to kill those chicks, but to gently set them outside of the nest and let them go sit on the back of their own cow. They can do whatever they need to do, but they don't need to overpower us. I don't know if that's the right thing or not. But we are the ones that's responsible for what we grow in our nest. It's our responsibility to do that. And this is not about shame and blame. This is not about, oh, you brought that into your life. That that's one of the things that kind of irks me. I see in our philosophy is we'll see people say, wow, I wonder what she was thinking to bring cancer into her life. Or, you know, wonder what he's thinking to, what his thoughts are to bring that into his life. And that's not it at all. It's a lot more like the cowbird. I don't know how those eggs got there, and it really doesn't make any difference, but that isn't what we need to nurture. We need to nurture the truth of who we are. And that truth is that we are magnificent children of God. It's not about blame and shame. Responsible means being able to respond. Being able to respond. And we are able to respond. This morning in our pray up, the sermon title came up, you know, what's in your wallet? And one of the practitioners made a profound statement. What's in my wallet is my practitioner license. And you know, you are all practitioners. Every one of us are practitioners. Some are licensed so that they can charge for sessions and do other things, and they've gone through 4 or more, 5 years of training. But we're all practitioners because we are all always using the law. We are all always using the law. And it is our responsibility to use it correctly. I'll be a smart aleck and go even further back than Linda in her sacred reading. She went to 2011. This is Ernest Holmes published in Science of Mind magazine an article in 1950. And this is what he said before you were born. The bad news is I do. It is, however, an outstanding truth that every privilege brings its corresponding responsibility. The right and power to make your own decisions, bad or good, puts you in a very vital position. You now realize that you are no longer an automaton, moved about by caprice of circumstance, solely guided by instincts or subject to some will superimposed upon you. You are free to choose, but you have to take the consequences of that choosing. You shall have and do have whatever you recognize and accept as yours. We are at choice. It's one of the things that I think is so magnificent about our philosophy. You know, some people want to be told. They want to be told what to believe. They want to be told what's good and what's bad and what to do. But we say that you are free to choose. You are free to fall on your face. And if you do fall on your face, as we pointed out in that session this morning, you're always falling forward. But you know, freedom to fail is inherent in our philosophy. But also the going along with that is it's you are also free to get up and dust yourself off and make a new choice. It's okay to do something wrong. It's insane to keep doing the same thing wrong again and again and expecting different results. But you're free to make that choice. So the conclusion for today, what I want you to take away, the question, where do you feel like you're holding back? And what is one step that you can take toward living the life that you have always wanted to live? You can ponder that over the next week. And as we move into the healing prayer, I had a great plan this morning. I opened my email, and I belong to this thing called the Minister's Listserv, and 31 different ministers have committed to doing a spiritual mind treatment every day of the month, so you get a new powerful prayer each month. And I opened the one for this morning, and it was by none other than Reverend Linda Kajiwara. Oh. And so for the healing treatment today, I was cut that out, print it, and do it, and I managed not to print it and bring it. But the essence of that treatment was very simply this. There is a magnificent power in the universe, an omnipresent, omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing power in the universe. And it operates through and as each and every one of us at every moment. And it is our divine right to accept all of the good of that power. We can accept our own health. We can accept our own prosperity and abundance. We can set aside those cowbird eggs and nurture the truth of who we are. And we are free to accept love. We are free to give and accept divine love. And so we just give thanks. We give thanks for our awareness of the power and the presence of that divine, magnificent, creative force of the universe. And it is within our power to give voice to this and to release these words to the working of a law that always responds. And so we just give thanks, we release these words, we let it go, we let it be, and so it is.